Scotty Scheffler went absolutely bananas over the weekend. And you know, talk about winning ugly. I don't think he had his A game. Won the Masters by multiple strokes against one of the strongest fields in professional golf. And he was out there like, yeah, you know, probably could have played about 8 strokes better.
So like the Canes this weekend, basically.
Like the Canes, only if the Canes were playing simultaneously like the four best teams in the NHL.
Fair.
His heater may have hit a new level at the Masters. There are people, and I'm not amongst them, but heck, I'm not that far from being converted, hinting he might hit the slam, meaning all four majors this year. He's got one. But if he plays...
Well, it's a good start.
You can't win them all if you don't win the first. If you include the players, which some do, call it the Scotty Slam. If he gets all five, he's got two of the five. Scotty Scheffler was asked about his recent success.
Do you sense that you're doing something different and something special right now?
I try not to think about the past or the future too much. I love trying to live in the present. I've had a really good start to the year, and I hope that I can continue on this path that I'm on. I'm going to continue to put in the work that's got me here.
You want to talk about how most golfers don't think? Right there. You mean in the present? If I hit one good shot, I step to the next one with the most confidence of any person in the history of the world. If I hit a bad shot, I step to the next shot with the least amount of confidence of anyone in the world. This guy, meanwhile, with millions and millions and millions of people watching him and millions and millions and millions of dollars on the line, just living in the present. Maybe that works. Maybe everyone should work on that. Here's the cautionary tale, though. Scotty Scheffler does not seem like this heater will end. He is the best ball striker on planet Earth right now, and he gets himself into trouble, and he gets out of trouble. People are doing, you know, like I said, they're starting to count how many different majors he'll win. Will he win 8? Will he win 10? Will he be double digits? Will he be Tom Watson? Will he be Gary Player? Will he be in the Jack Tiger category? Will he be? There's cautionary tales of players that have reached this point. A bunch. Amongst them, Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods is a cautionary tale of enjoying some. Make sure you enjoy something while it is happening rather than just constantly thinking about the future. Right? Everybody with Tiger, he wins one. All right, is he going to get to 25? He got to 15. Still, there might be more to come. Don't let me be the one to doubt him. But he's got 15 majors, and there used to be the conversation on how many over 20 he'll get. And you might have missed like 10, 11, 12 because you're sitting there going, well, is he going to get to 25? With Scotty, the same thing. Well, is he going to win the Slam? Is he going to win the Open? Is he going to win the U.S. Open? Is he going to win the PGA? Is he going to win the Masters back-to-back? Will he beat this? Will he beat that? How about right now, this dude is on an absolute heater, and he just beat one of the best fields in golf with his B-plus game? Tiger knows what that feels like. He's won tournaments with his B-game. Now, it felt like we got his A-game on Thursday and Friday just to make the cut. Here's Tiger Woods on his performance.
It was a good week. It was a good week all around. I think that... coming in here and having not have played, you know, a full tournament in a very long time, it was a good fight on Thursday and Friday. Unfortunately, yesterday didn't quite, you know, turn out the way I wanted to. Today, the round that I, the way that Tom is playing is what I thought I had in my system. Unfortunately, I just didn't produce it.
We are celebrating Tiger Woods making a cut, which is deserving of celebration at this point because at times it looked like he could barely walk around the course. But we are celebrating Tiger Woods making a cut. So far from what we'd be celebrating for Tiger at this time in his career. But that's just one. What about this? When Rory McIlroy won his fourth major, did anyone think he would be 10 years later still sitting on four majors? No. The confidence would have been as high as it is for Scotty right now. When Jordan Spieth was rolling through everybody at 21, 22 years old, Did anybody think we'd be sitting here at this point, he's still on the same amount of majors? No. You could even say it for Colin Morikawa. Colin Morikawa was only like 25, 26 years old, but he picked up two majors the first time he played in those majors. Bet you would have thought by now he'd have more than two. He does not. So appreciate what Scottie Scheffler is doing because it might end. I don't think it is. You don't think it is. Everyone I know in golf doesn't think it's going to end. But I bet if we could go back in time, we would have said the exact same thing about Rory, the exact same thing about Spieth, the exact same thing about Tiger the last time they won majors. Well, maybe Tiger two times ago. 2019, we were all, enjoy this one because we might not get it
again.
Yeah,
exactly. That was like, oh, wait a second.
But previously.
Like the sun came back up?
Him walking off and giving a hug to Charlie. Anyway, hopefully it happens again. Anyway, the other cool part about the Masters, and then we'll move on, is you don't have to win to have a heck of a week. Akshay Bhatia, guy from Wake Forest, lives in Wake Forest, home course right around here, finished tied for 35th. It's a great week for him. Great week. First time playing in the Masters. Didn't know he was going to be playing in the Masters until the previous Sunday when he won. Went from like, oh, you know, I'll probably be watching, maybe playing in an alternate event, to I got to get to Augusta and play some practice rounds in a second. He played better on Sunday than he played on Friday or Saturday. That's a huge win for a young player. By the way, he's 22 years old, one of the most talented guys on tour. Grayson Murray from Raleigh. Do you know what he did? Showed wild amounts of intestinal fortitude. I'm going to read you his scores, okay? 76 on Thursday. Not the best. 74 on Saturday. Little better. 78 on, or sorry, that was 74 on Friday. 78 on Saturday. There's the motion of like, uh-oh, wheels are falling off. Boom, under par 70 on Sunday. That is determination that you can build on. Bring that grit and grind right back here to Raleigh. Get ready for your next tournament and go win the darn thing. And then there's this story of amateur Neil Shipley. Neil Shipley was the only amateur to make the cut. So he's the only amateur playing on Saturday and Sunday. He got to play Sunday just by luck of where they were situated on the leaderboard. With Tiger Woods at the Masters on a Sunday. He is a grad student from Ohio State.
That is a lifetime memory right there.
There's some saying he passed the Tiger Woods inner circle test. After his round, which, by the way, he beat Tiger Woods on Sunday, the round they played together, 77 for Tiger, 73 for Neil Shipley. I don't care if he's playing on one leg. You take that scorecard, you frame it, and you put it on your wall for the rest of your life.
You make that your Twitter profile.
Sunday at the Masters, I beat Tiger Woods while playing with him. But here's where they're saying he passed the Tiger Woods inner circle test.
Okay.
A reporter, after the round on Sunday, asked him, hey, I saw Tiger pass you a note on the eighth fairway. What did that note say? That's what Neil Shipley did. His eyes darted around the room, and he said, that did not happen. I'm not saying the reporter's telling the truth. I'm not saying he didn't see something. I'm saying if that was like a personal phone number and hit me up when you need help, love your game, if that were some bit of advice for turning pro, if that were something from Tiger Woods, you better believe Tiger didn't want everybody to know he was passing that around.
Yep.
So the correct answer is I do not recall. I have no idea what you are talking about. Why would you ask me that question? I don't know what.
Why? Why would you ask me that?
Yeah, exactly. Tiger? I played with Tiger today. I have no idea what you are talking about.
Who's that?
That's he may have just, you know, earned. I don't know if you've seen like Jersey Boys where the mob guy rips the $100 bill and gives it to the singer. Like you can cash this in for one favor anytime. Like that might have been the ripped up dollar bill. Passed. The Drive with Tim Donnelly, 99.9 The Fan, that happened over the weekend. Another thing that happened over the weekend was the Savannah Bananas were in town.
They were. It was a fun time.
Dennis, you went.
I did. I got to go yesterday.
I have not been. I've obviously seen the social media stuff because it goes viral every 20 minutes. Did good for adults as it is for kids?
The
kids stuff is.
My girlfriend and I went. We had a blast. We had an absolute blast. I mean, it's for anybody. It's for anyone and everyone because they have something going on that will entertain you, whether it's the actual game itself, which they play fast, by the way. They put a two-hour time limit on the board, and they finished a full nine-inning game in under the 2 hours.
Did you catch – I know they have the rule where if somebody in the stands catches a foul ball, it's an out.
Yeah, that actually didn't happen. That actually didn't happen during the game. But that is actually one of the rules that they have. And they just – they do things different than a normal baseball game to make things fun. So, for example, if there's a runner on base or just at any point and there's a walk to the batter, everyone on the field has to touch the baseball. And during anyone can advance as far as they can during that time. So it's just kind of like a
So anytime there's a walk, it's like ding, 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 pure chaos.
Kind of, yeah. It's
around
like, oh, okay.
The horn ball, it's getting whipped around.
Exactly, as opposed to like, all right, let me just trot down to first base and someone just walks over to second, whatever it might be. You can go from first to third or from second to home. And the way they do scoring is a little bit different as well. It's pretty cool. So they don't do traditional like, oh, you had like five runs to four. It was in one inning, for example, if the party animals is the other team they play against.
Of course.
If they score two runs and the bananas score one, you win the inning, so you get 1 point.
Okay.
So they do all the way that up until the ninth inning. Then every run you score in the ninth inning counts as a point. So it's just a little bit different. It's just a little bit different.
So here's what always pops up when the bananas come through, the Globetrotters come through, any of these more entertainment models, is should other professional sports organizations obviously not go that far, but learn something from them.
Oh, 100%.
So I have a hard time with this.
Okay.
Because what they do is awesome, right? And I'm making fans of a sport. I remember seeing the Globetrotters and the Bananas weren't around when I was a kid, but seeing the Globetrotters when I was a kid, I remember individuals. I remember certain gags. I reference them sometimes as analogies here on the show. One of my favorite bits ever is guy shot a half court shot, missed it. And I was probably like 7 at the time. And I was like, oh gosh, he missed it. He grabbed the microphone, said, I know the problem. I was too close. Took 10 steps further back, missed it. Grabbed the microphone, said, I know the problem. I was too close. Take 10 steps back, made it. And what I didn't realize at the time was he was just going to keep moving back till he made it.
Exactly.
And it was going to be a successful punchline regardless. But as a kid, I was like, that's hilarious. Like, I remember all of that stuff. I think what it is great. As a former athlete, I think it needs to be delicately balanced.
Sure.
Because the Bananas, the Globetrotters, they are every bit like entertainers as they are athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Professional athletes, when you get to the professional, like, above minors and all that, they have to, like, those are finely tuned athletes that put in a lot of work. And I know it's a game, children's game, and adults get to play it.
It's still their profession.
I can't imagine what coaches would do, but you don't want like a circus every media timeout.
Sure.
Where you're Red Panda at halftime, fantastic. Red Panda during a 30-second timeout, I'm like, hey, I don't know. It's a little different there. But I do understand that it's an entertainment product, and if you're going to sell tickets, you got to sell tickets.
Mm-hmm.
So, how about this? For every game you are below 500, you get like another added attraction, right? Because that, like the Canes, we talk about the Canes.
Mm-hmm.
The Canes, to me, their whole vibe is awesome. I was telling you off air earlier today. When I moved to this area and started saying like, oh, you know, I'm going to cover the Canes, want to go to see some games, everyone in this area was, before they even got to like, oh, they're really good, went to, oh, your son is going to love it. The atmosphere is so family friendly and there's a lot going on and it's so welcoming. It's great. That is wildly important for building a fan base. I think winning is more important to building a fan base. You get behind winners, whether there's, you know, the shell game on the Jumbotron during timeouts or not.
Yeah.
So the worse you are, I think the more you should bananas it. I think you should go more bananas.
Go bananas.
I think you should go more bananas the worse your team is. Charlotte Hornets, I'm thinking if the ball goes in the stands, they should be able to take a shot for a three. Like the Charlotte Hornets, more of that. And by the way, I'm joking about that. But they should have more emphasis on making sure it's an inclusive environment, making sure everybody is having a good time. Meanwhile, the Canes, right, they're getting ready for a postseason run. I don't know if they should be doing all the extracurriculars, especially if it's going to distract the team.
Well, I think the Canes really leaned into it back in 2018, 2019 when they started doing the storm surge after games. And they started, like Justin Williams, when we talked about this with Adam Gold a while back, was he started realizing that people started to stick around towards the end of games because they wanted to see the next thing that they were going to do. Because I remember they did like the bowling, they played basketball, they did like a mock baseball thing on opening day, they played football, they did a whole bunch of different stuff, and it was part of the entertainment as a fan. And again, that was post-game, player-led. Like with the Savannah Bananas, they leaned all in on that with the skits and all that kind of stuff, but they were still playing a baseball game. Remember, I was like in the ninth inning, there was like a line drive double play at first base, and I was like legit baseball play. Yep. Like they're still out there playing, but they lean in heavily towards the entertainment. You can pull aspects from understanding, especially when it's minor league baseball and some of these other levels, is that you want people to come into your stands and have a good time and have a great experience. The fan experience has to be more than just what I'm seeing on the field or I'm seeing on the ice or seeing on the court, because that is what gets people to continue to come, especially when ticket prices and parking prices and concessions are continuing to go up and up and up. You have to give me more reason to go to a game. If I'm going to pay more, I should get more. True. As simple as that. If I'm paying more, I should not be getting the exact same thing.
And I think this is what is giving me pause. When I was playing, we were, 24,000, 25,000 seat stadium at the University of Delaware. Nothing crazy, but they would do all the Jumbotron games and everything. And I just remember the coaches preseason. If they used to play jump around, and they had a preseason video of players. You jump and you try to get the fans into it. If you were caught looking at the Jumbotron, watching your teammates do the jump around, or they would sometimes do like they'd ask seven guys, what was your favorite cartoon growing up? And they'd play it on the Jumbotron during
a... they do that stuff like a Canes and all that.
If we were caught looking at that, even if you were like buried on the depth chart, never going to play, if you were just caught like watching it, coaches would go bananas. Because you got to be locked in, you got to be focused. I didn't mean go bananas. Yeah. They would be very angry with you. And I think that framed the way I look at all of that, where it's like the players do not participate in the fun. And if fun is everywhere, it's really hard not to see it. Like, I don't know how you do some of the banana stuff without distracting everybody. But it was fun for you and your girlfriend
time.
And everyone I know that's seen him. It's been a blast.
It was a great time.
The Drive with Tim Donnelly, 99.9 The Fan. Quickly here, I just want to put a shout-out to Harrison Ingram of UNC with basically the judge from Caddyshack. Well, we're waiting. Are you coming back to UNC or not? Because here's why I think it's important. He isn't easy to replace. Versatility isn't as easy to readily find in the portal. Like what he does. I'm going to say something and I'm going to need you, UNC fans, to wait 45 seconds before you get mad at me. I think he's more difficult to replace in the portal than RJ Davis. Because RJ Davis hasn't said he's coming back either. But I'm looking at Harrison Ingram saying, make a decision. Here's why. You won't find RJ Davis quality in the portal, right? You're not going to find like potentially the... If he comes back, he'd be the favorite to be the Wooden Award candidate next year or Wooden Award winner next year. You're not going to find that, but you can find his style of player, right? You can find a 6'3 score-first shooting guard that can be a ball handler if you need him in a pinch. Those do exist. I'm not sure there is like 6'7", 6'8", can play inside, can play outside, can shoot, can defend, can be an amorphous blob as readily available in the portal, even a lesser version of. Right? I think you can find a lesser version of RJ Davis. I think it's hard to even find a lesser version of Harrison Ingram. So, and he's like, you build your roster kind of around the skill set of your core. I think Harrison Ingram, for UNC, his decision is more urgent. RJ Davis's might be more important because of everything I said, right? He might be the Wooden Award leader coming into next year. But what Harrison Ingram brings changes the way you build your roster, changes what else you shop for lack of a better term, in the portal. Harrison Ingram makes it easier to replace Armando Bacot, right? Because if you bring in a center who's more stretch, who likes to maybe shoot from the outside, you know Harrison Ingram can go grab 18, 19 rebounds. We've seen it. If you don't have Harrison Ingram there, your center, your five man, whoever's, whether it's Washington or somebody coming out of the portal, probably has to be more of a rebounding dude. Probably has to put more of a priority on that. If RJ Davis leaves, you're probably putting another score first shooting guard in the starting lineup because, I mean, let's be real. Being a score first shooting guard is what everybody wants to be when you're a kid, right? Maybe a score first point guard. Maybe a score first point guard, because that way you don't even have to.
Allen Iverson.
You don't even need anyone to pass it to you. But there's always guys that can put shots up. Guys that can impact the game in a bunch of different ways without putting shots up are a little bit more rare. And that's why I think Harrison Ingram, for UNC's betterment, that decision's a big one and it needs to happen quick.
The deadline to declare for the NBA draft early entry is April 27th.
12 days from now. In the middle of the NFL draft.
Just before the NFL draft.
No, the NFL draft is the 25th.
It is the 25th.
So it's day three of the NFL draft is when they
have to decide. Next Saturday. Saturday the 27th.
Two Saturdays from now.
Yeah.
The NFL draft. So yeah. I'm such a sports fan. I don't know months and stuff. I know I can judge every how long away something is in relation to some big. I just got done with okay, so that's 2 days after the Masters.
Mm-hmm.
Like now the Masters is in the past, so I need to find a new benchmark. It's the NFL draft.
By the way,
25th to the 27th.
For those that do enter early into the NBA draft, if they do not sign with an agent, you have until June 16th to withdraw from the draft. The NBA draft is June 26th, June 27th.
That makes sense. Once we get through the NFL draft, I might need to know that again.
That's
fine. But right now, it's all based around the NFL draft.